In today's episode, I'm talking to Shannon Nishi, the Director of Customer Success at Customer.io. She is such an interesting and accomplished leader, and we start the conversation with our own experiences in performing arts. We both were either in theater performance or in music performance before transitioning into tech. So you will hear us both speak about the skills overlaps and unique backgrounds that can propel a career in tech. And then we are going deep into tech careers, or basically how to land a job as a customer success manager. So we start with strategies and tips on how to craft your CV to get noticed in the crowds, and then how to prepare for the interview process. Shannon is sharing some of the tips of how to get noticed and what not to do, what mistakes to avoid. So if you're looking to get your first CSM role, or if you're looking into transitioning into customer success role, this episode is for you. It can't get any better than hearing interview tips and advice firsthand from a hiring manager. So let's get into it. Hi, everyone. This is Maria Skobe-Pillay, and you're listening to Women in Customer Success podcast, the first women-only podcast where remarkable ladies of customer success share their stories and practical tools to help you succeed and make an impact. If you want to learn more about customer success, get career advice, and be inspired, you're in the right place. So let's tune in. Welcome to the new episode of Women in Customer Success podcast. I am super, super happy today to introduce you my guest. She is Shannon Nishi, Director of Customer Success at Customer.io. Shannon, it's such a pleasure to have you here today. Welcome to Women in Customer Success podcast.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Shannon, I have so many things that I want to talk to you about, but shall we go through, I call it a few of the rapid fire questions. Tell us a bit more about yourself. Where are you based? And then, are you an introvert or an extrovert?
I am based in Ottawa, Ontario, and I am definitely an extrovert. I love being around people and getting the energy from other people. You know, not that I'm out at all hours of the day, but definitely when I need to get into my happy place, it's usually around other people with shared interests and my friends and loved ones.
That's wonderful. Shannon, if you would need to change your career tomorrow, what would you change it into? What would that be?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I have like a more practical answer maybe, or more like serious answer. I'm super interested in psychology in general. So I sometimes think, oh, if I was going to like reinvent myself, I think I would maybe try and go back to school for psychology and either get into the research side, or I don't know, maybe eventually look at like patient care, that kind of thing. But
ooh, nice.
I think, you know, the more fun answer that I always think about is that I know that I would love to be a DJ. Like I definitely, completely different lifestyle, but I would love to do that. I love dancing. I love being around music. I love seeing people having fun around music. So yeah, that would be kind of my dream.
Now, off the record, but it's on the record. Have you done DJing so far? Like, is there a place that the listeners can go and figure out, ooh, that's DJ, like remix by Shannon.
No, I wish. No, nothing that interesting. I have some Spotify playlists and that's kind of the extent.
Well, it's never too late. Definitely something you can still do. Now, going back to your teenage years, when you were 16, would the 16-year-old Nishi be surprised to find you in this role today?
Absolutely not, no. I mean, I would be surprised because it's definitely not something that I was even aware of when I was 16, right? Like, I don't know that customer success necessarily even existed as an industry. And at the time, you know, I was a performer. I was an actor, and that was kind of what I was focused on. That's what I was looking to go to school for and really honing those skills. And so, you know, if I were to fast forward to now and look at where I am, I don't think I could have envisioned that. But, you know, looking at the reasons that I like my career today and the things that motivate me and make me feel good and, you know, where I am at currently at Customer.io, I think, you know, it's all logical that I ended up where I am.
Obviously, it's all logical. So now let's figure out why, because I really want to go back to your, as you said, 16-year-old self, some teenage years and the college years when you were studying performing arts, when you were an actress. tell me more about it. Like, what did you study? What did you do? What type of performing was that?
Yeah. I started as a kid. I started doing musical theater as a kid. I think I did my first professional show when I was 8 years old, just, you know, locally when I was living in Colorado. I grew up in Colorado. And so, yeah, I
sorry, do you remember what was
the name? The very first show that I did was The King and I.
Come on.
I had done some other, you know, like elementary school stuff before that, but that was like the first real, quote unquote, real show that I was in. But yeah, you know, I always danced and sang and enjoyed acting. And so, yeah, that was something that I did through all my growing up years, and then decided that I wanted to pursue that in university. So I ended up going to Chicago and I got my Bachelor of Fine Arts in musical theater.
Oh my gosh, this is just so awesome for so many reasons. Firstly, my daughter is 8. She's singing. She will perform everywhere. Like, I used to go to music school and study that. So it kind of runs in the family, and not that she has a choice. She just has to do music a bit. But it is just so fascinating for me that you were in musical theater, because I think it's awesome and it's difficult. Like, it's not only acting, it's not only singing, it's combining all of those different skills at once. And it's awesome and it's exhilarating and it's difficult. And you were doing it. So what were the type of shows? Do you remember some of the shows that you were doing as a student or just straight after? Like, what were some of those most memorable ones?
Yeah, I mean, I did some really fun shows when I was in university with my classmates. And a lot of them, you know, just not even necessarily shows that other people would know, but showcases and pieces that we put together that were very unique to that set of people that played to our strengths, that we got to be creative with. And I think those really were my favorite, because there was just so much collaboration involved. And it's one of some of those performances that you just can't create again, right? Because it was so specific to that cast of people and the directors and the choreographers. But yeah, I did a lot of children's theater.
Oh, cute.
Yeah, did some other dance shows and things. So a little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything. I mean, awesome. I can just start imagining all of those different shows and thinking, how amazing is that? And then what happened? How long were you enjoying that until you realized, there is something else in life as well? What happened?
Yeah. So I mentioned I was going to school in Chicago. I had graduated. I lived in Chicago for a couple of years after that. And I don't think it's any secret. It's really a grind to be an entertainer, you know, and you're constantly auditioning and looking for your next job. And it can be very mentally challenging at points as well. And I started to think, like, you know, there are other things that I'm also interested in. And I wonder if one of those things is ultimately going to make me happier. And so I kind of made the decision to step away from theater and performing in general. And then was looking to kind of leverage what my skills were at that point. And because I was acting, I was serving, I was working in restaurants and bars, and I was also working in retail. And so a lot of my resume was based on customer skills, right? And working with customers. And so I was trying to think of ways that I could leverage that. There's a great tech scene in Chicago, and I was interested in getting into that. And so I started learning about ways that I might be able to start moving in that direction. And I learned about customer success, which this was in 2015. So it was still relatively early, and, you know, different titles, different names, that kind of thing. It was like a very all-encompassing role. But yeah, I got lucky enough to find a company that was willing to take a chance on me. And that's where I got into tech.
Oh, that's so perfect. I see lots of parallels. I think I saw a name, customer success manager, first time in 2016. What I would like to know, when you think about the performing world and being so close to the audience and basically like living and breathing what audience is doing, to translate into the tech, into working with customer, because on one hand, it is, you know, your experience in serving in retail, hospitality, and then on the stage. What were some of the, you know, parallels or lessons that you can apply into both of those worlds? Because I think we can start listing them forever, because there are just so many. But what were some main ones that you've realized throughout the years?
I think the main one that I come back to all the time is just the storytelling element and continuity that is so important in performing arts. And, you know, I spent a lot of time studying that and putting that into practice in my classes in university. And I think that it's really important to have that same kind of story element or through line when we think about customer experiences as in general, because as good of a product as you might have or as good of CSMs as you have, if the customer isn't able to follow the storyline and what the value is that they're seeing or how they're supposed to implement a product, if they can't connect those dots, then there ends up being miscommunication. People are frustrated. It really is, to me, like putting on a production where, you know, you have to coordinate all of these elements and get the timing correct so that the person receiving all of that information is able to process it and receive the message that you want them to receive. And I think that, you know, just having that foundation of acting and looking at scripts and trying to figure out like, okay, how do you make this part make sense to an audience? That comes into play all the time when working with customers, especially when dealing with more complex situations, right?
Were you ever like intentionally trying to put the elements of like hero's journey into, I don't know, just customer, like, you know, success or customer journey that we are doing? I know it's very, very different, but some of those elements of how the storyline goes and what has to happen, I just wonder, have you done it? It's pure curiosity.
Yeah, I can't say that I've done it super intentionally in that capacity, but where I think that it helps me a lot is just as a leader for my team, right? And trying to understand my team members' perspective and how we look at change and how we communicate change and the way that I present information to them. So generally, anytime that I'm preparing an important presentation, whether it's to my team or an external audience or at a conference or whatever that is, you know, I really lean on my processes that I had as an actor to figure out, okay, what are the like key points that I need to hit and how do I connect all of those together and, you know, make this easy to follow and address the perspectives of the people that are watching before they have to ask the questions.
Today's episode is brought to you by Deployflow, your go-to team for cloud transformation, deployment services, and managed support. Are you a US-based company looking to open European offices and operations? Our teams of experts are strategically located in the UK and Central Europe, catering to US companies seeking top-tier application support across Europe. Deployflow specializes in collaborating with scale-ups, ensuring seamless operations and optimal application performance. If you're about to open European offices and operations, partner with Deployflow and have a peace of mind. Book a call and find out more about top-tier managed IT support services, deployflow.co. Talking about the audience, obviously you're an expert in audience, in connecting with the audience. Extremely important as a CS leader or post-sales, basically almost for everybody in business who works with customers. But probably for you, it comes very naturally, but not for many other CSMs who need to try to figure out the room, you know, how to read the room, etc. What are some things that's like, how do you read the audience and how are you teaching like your teams to read the audience in so many different contexts?
I love that question. It can be really challenging. I think it just requires a lot of awareness, not only of yourself, but just of the objective situation. And so I think that's always what I'm trying to encourage our team is to look at the details and the facts and get as much information as possible and to keep yourself on the same team as the customer, right? Like, how do we look at whatever the situation is, whatever solution we're trying to put in place and do it coming from the same angle as the customer so that we're able to consider that perspective and put something in place that's going to make sense for them. And I think, you know, it's easy in the business world to quickly put up barriers or to create, you know, kind of this them against us feeling in certain situations. And I think that's something that we all have to constantly fight and break down to understand, okay, what is the perspective and what information am I missing here that makes this make sense from the audience perspective? And how do we close that gap? Because that piece, that like missing communication piece is generally what's going to solve the issue.
And how you are really bringing those barriers down and you are almost becoming one with the audience, like you all working towards a common goal. Now you reminded me of what you said earlier, how some of your previous productions at uni were so special based on the casts, right? And you can't repeat many of them. Even if you have absolutely same script, but there is no chance they will ever be the same. So even in business, no matter how many times you have the same process or let's say same presentation, same whatever, how is it important for, you know, all the, let's say, even internal teams to almost being in harmony, delivering that together? And I just love your example from before. Could you tell us more about, like, how do you work together in that aspect to deliver that harmonious performance?
Yeah. I mean, if we stick with the kind of performing analogies, when you look at a music score or a script, like, that is the backbone, right? And even though every single performance is different, that's the thing that's guiding everyone, that people can come back to when something goes off the rails. We all know, okay, well, we know that this line needs to happen, or we know that this song needs to happen, or whatever that is. And so I think that's why process, it's the same thing. It's so important, because you need to have those structures that support you so that you're able to kind of take those risks and detours, but then come back to what the process is, so that you know that you're ultimately going to end up at the destination that you want. And I think it's, you know, important to align with other departments on what those processes are, what pieces we're all responsible for, so that we can use that to create all of these different unique experiences and still feel confident that we're overall headed in the same and the correct direction.
So process is your friend. Okay, since you've been in customer.io, how many people did you actually employ, or how many team members do you have at the moment? Because you started basically from scratch.
Yeah, well, when I joined the team, it was in the summer of 2020, and I was hired along with two other people, and we made the team 7. So at the time, you know, it was a pretty small team, and it was just starting to grow. Now we have 26 or 27 people in the customer success department. So it's grown quite a bit. And I've been really fortunate to be involved in the hiring for the majority of the team that exists now. So I feel a lot of personal investment in all the players that we have.
So definitely you spend last few years interviewing a lot, because to hire so many people, you need to spend a lot of time talking to people. Okay, let's speak about that. It is such an incredible market. Actually, just today, I have seen some interesting stats. Let me see if I can pull them up. I think that, yeah. So actually, Vitaly, I guess, put the study out saying that 23% of CSMs are actively looking for their new jobs. Okay, so many other stats saying how they are feeling burnt out, etc. But there is a chance that obviously there are so many people constantly looking to enter into customer success world or to change their roles. And as we know, with so many layoffs, there are hundreds and thousands of people very experienced that are on the market. And it's absolutely difficult to even get the interview. So with all of your experiences, would you like to tell the audience, like, what are the things that they could do to firstly land the interview? And then we can move on with so many other aspects of that process. How to get noticed?
Yeah, it's such a tough market right now. And I think it's really important for anybody that's going through the interview process right now just to recognize that and give yourself some grace and some space and recognize that you're constantly opening yourself up for rejection. And it's a really vulnerable state to be in. And I think just objectively taking a step back to recognize that helps with the process a bit. It's interesting. Obviously, I've been to hundreds and hundreds of auditions, and I've been rejected hundreds of times. So it's really interesting for me to go through the interview process, because an audition is basically like the shortest interview ever, right? And yeah, I think just giving yourself that grace is really important. But yeah, I've been a part of a lot of interviews over the last couple of years, and definitely happy to share my own take on what makes a good interview and what's important to me as a hiring interview. I think that, you know, as you're applying for so many positions, it can be really easy to just do, I'm just going to submit to everything. And I have my resume, maybe I have my cover letter. I'm just going to submit to like as many places as I can. Obviously, it's important to get the volume out, but I would also challenge yourself not to start applying or going to interviews or submitting just to submit if you're not ready to like put in the preparation specifically for that role. Because just with the amount of people that are applying now, right? Like if you're not taking the time to really answer the questions on the application or to make sure that, you know, your cover letter is matching the description of the role, then you're not giving yourself a fair chance in the pool. And so I think it is important to just be thoughtful about, like, is this actually something that I want to spend my time on? And don't burn yourself out on a bunch of opportunities that you're not actually interested in.
Who will actually see those applications and cover letters? Like, how do they have to look like, the CVs and cover letters that, let's say, talent team would even put it in front of the hiring managers? Because even putting lots of effort into the letter, now being unsure, will it even reach the person who can understand like what the letter says in its, like in the way it should be understood? What are the typical processes now?
Yeah, I think it's different at every company. For us, you know, I myself, I've looked at many, many resumes and will help go through that resume process. And I think it's really interesting in customer success as well, because you have people coming from so many different backgrounds. Like, not every resume is going to look the same. There's not necessarily a specific set of skills that you can see that somebody is objectively qualified for and say, this is the fit. And so I think when it comes to your resume, it's really important to just make it easy to read and clear. I see a lot of instances where it's tricky too, because there's plenty of companies out there that use different AI softwares and things to scan resumes. And so I know that part of it is, you know, people are looking for certain keywords in the resume. But I do also see a lot of resumes where I can read the job description and I can kind of tell, you put customer success manager on this job description, but I don't think it was actually a customer success manager role. And like, I can appreciate these skills are transferable, but don't lie about it, right? So I think, you know, just making sure that it's clear and that it's logical, that everything in there like makes sense and that you can pull out a clear story is really important. And, you know, as much as it's really nice to see a nicely designed resume, the most important thing to me is that I can easily read the content and that there's nothing there that's immediately disqualifying the candidate. So make sure that you're reading through the job requirements and you're not adding something in there that might be really confusing to the person reading the resume as to, you know, why that's included or anything that is in conflict with what they've said that they want for the role. And then I think the other thing is cover letters. Like, I know this is so debated whether you should have a cover letter, whether you shouldn't. I would say, you know, I see a lot of companies make cover letters optional. And I would say particularly if you're coming from a background that isn't directly customer success, but you know that you have translatable skills, use the cover letter to your advantage to explain that. Because so often I'll see a resume where, you know, I'm like, I'm really interested by this person. They have an interesting background. Maybe it's not exactly customer success, but now I want to know, like, why do you want to be in customer success? Do you know what it is? Do you know what the role entails? And like, how do you see your value translating into customer success? And so I often will look to see if they've included a cover letter at that point. And you just have such a better chance if you're using that cover letter to your advantage to show, this is what I specifically bring and kind of my awareness of the role.
That's such a good takeaway. Really try to put a cover letter, try to write it and explain, really, this is your, you know, your elevator pitch, your chance to present yourself as the best candidate. But if you're not using cover letter, like, I do believe even a very short paragraph of like summary or objective or however it's called at the top of your CV, even that can be an opportunity in two or three sentences just to, you know, say why are you passionate about it and who are you and why you should be considered. But Shannon, it's interestingly, you said something, when you look at the CV, you can potentially see something that could immediately disqualify candidates. Tell me a few examples, like when you check as the CV, like when you're checking CV, what are the red flags immediately?
Well, and maybe this one applies more so to cover letters, but I've definitely seen it on resumes and CVs before too. But if you're going to put the company that you're applying for into the resume as like your objective, you know, to secure a role at X company, you have to make sure that that part is updated. I can't tell you how many times I've seen resumes where it's like, oh, this is one of our competitors, or this is a completely entirely different customer. So like, just making sure that you're taking your time and, you know, like I said at the beginning, just being intentional about what you're applying for. Because you don't want to waste your own time that way. So that's the one that kind of like sticks out to me the most. You know, I think the other things are just if I feel that the resume is not being objective in terms of their skills, there's a lot of text and language on there, but it's not pointing to experience or direct skills. It's more just talking about, you know, like pretty high level common things that you want to see. But it's like if everything on there is like, team player, good communicator, you know, everybody says that about themselves. So it's like, I'm really looking for what are the things that make you specifically valuable? And like, what are your superpowers that you bring to the job?
I love so much everything about what you said now, because I remember looking into CVs you can just flip through most of them and say, okay, well, it's all either ChatGPT or it's all Google. It's all absolutely same words every single time, and words that people wouldn't typically use for themselves because, you know, being highly motivated or team player, etc. Those are all like the CV types of words. No one speaks like that. So what actually speaks to a hiring manager from CV? From my perspective, I would always tell CSMs, you know, if you had any experience before, write down the numbers, right? What was the type of, you know, books of business you managed? Like, how much did you grow the books of business? Write anything that you can quantify, because no one wants to see only job description, right? It's in the job description. You don't want to just state responsibilities. You want to give evidence. What works for you? What do you like seeing in CV?
Yeah, I think that's a huge one. Really, it's showing how you contributed in the roles that you were in. Like, think about the things that you're most proud of in your past roles, and how that can translate into a bullet point. The other thing that I actually find very helpful on CVs is when people just include a very short, just like one sentence explanation of what the organization did. When I'm looking for people that have relevant experience or trying to understand like what is their context that they're bringing, you can just put a random company name. Nobody knows what that means. So really, you know, taking the time to call out like a SaaS, this was a SaaS organization that was focused in the marketing space or whatever those things are, that create some clarity around like, okay, I can kind of see the context that you're bringing and the industry knowledge that you're going to have coming into the role already.
Such a huge takeaway. Yes, include a sentence about a company, because there is a difference whether the company is, you know, big organization, small startups. And based on even that context, it will tell you, a hiring manager, how much potential exposure that person had in different situations. Why else is that context important? I would like to know, like, from your perspective, because when I was hiring, very often it's about what do you already have within your team and what are the very different skill set and backgrounds and experiences that you would want to bring. So even a CV that can look absolutely perfect will not go through simply because, well, maybe three of your team members are already that profile and now you are really looking for somebody very different. So how would you advise someone to kind of put some of those different contexts or even personalities within the CV so that hiring manager can almost make decisions easier? Like, how to highlight some of those interesting things or differences?
Yeah, I think that's a great point, and definitely something that I'm always prioritizing, is trying to build out that kind of diverse skill set across the team. I think where people can trick themselves in these situations, especially if you're newer to applying and interviewing, is by trying to guess what you think the interviewer or the hiring manager wants to see, and saying like, okay, well, these are the skills that are listed in the job description, so I'm just going to mirror this word for word, you know, that kind of thing. I don't necessarily have, it's not like I'm like, I know exactly what the resume that comes in is going to look like that I'm going to hire, right? So I think it's really about understanding like, what do you uniquely have to bring to the table, and what are you going to shine in? Like, what really interests you? What sparks you? What's going to drive you? So that I start to get a picture of like, oh man, if we put this person on the team, we're going to be able to have them work on these projects or have them work with these specific customers or fill these gaps. Like, I have to be able to see where they fit into the puzzle. And if you're trying to create a resume that's like, quote unquote, picture perfect, you can fall into the trap of just making yourself look very generic. And that's where you get a lot of the same thing over and over again. Like, I want to see what is the experience that you have in your resume that's different, that's not SaaS, that's not tech, and why is that valuable? And how do you continue to use that in your roles moving forward?
Shout out to our partner, Guider, the leading mentoring, peer learning, and upskilling platform. Women in Customer Success teamed up with Guider to deliver all year-round mentoring programs for our new Power Up Tribe members. Now picture this, a dedicated platform where you choose your mentoring goals and skills that you want to develop. Then you browse through mentors' profiles and you can choose amongst hundreds of remarkable women who are mentors. When you choose your mentor based on their skills or expertise and experience, there's a match. And you can schedule calls directly on the platform, write session notes, capture resources, and monitor your own progress and goals, all in one place. So isn't that great? And also, you will find resources on how to prepare yourself for mentoring sessions, what are the benefits of being a mentor, how to approach your mentoring relationship as a mentee, or how to become a first-time mentor, and so much more. So don't leave your career to chance. Work with experts who will help you develop the skills and mindset needed to thrive in your career. Join our Power Up tribe to access our flagship mentoring program with Guider. Find the link in the show notes. That's such a nice call out as well, Shannon, as you know, when people are getting advice about their CVs, they always hear, oh, make it more targeted. You know, don't be very generic. Yes, perfect. But in that targeting, yeah, make sure that you can shine. So all of those words and sentences that make you or make your CV very generic, it's probably not the good way around. And even if you feel that some companies maybe, you know, are not suitable for your types of experience or skill set, still don't be shy from it, right? Kind of embrace that background and everything that you are bringing to the table, because you never know when it will be recognized. Okay, Shannon, so that's about getting the CV right. Shall we move on to the interview? Once the CV is approved for the interview, how shall we even take that? Do you want to tell us firstly some of the biggest mistakes that you have seen people doing at interviews? Yeah, maybe that's a good way to start. What not to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately it just comes down to preparation, right? Like you have to have a plan for how you're going to prepare, and you do have to prepare. And obviously some people are naturally good at interviewing and maybe that preparation looks a little less than them. But I think it's really important that everybody sits down before they start the interviewing process and figure out what are the things that I want to make sure that I highlight? What am I proud of in my career so far? What have I learned from my career so far? And start to be really specific in the examples that you can speak to. And what the ultimate takeaways you want from the person that's interviewing you to have. And so, I know in the past, something that's worked well for me as I've gone through interviewing cycles is actually just setting up a spreadsheet with this is an anecdote that I can quickly call to. And these are kind of the qualities that shows in me. And like, these are some examples of when this might be an example that I bring up on an interview, and just create a set of those examples, like maybe like 8 to 10 examples that you have ready that you feel really comfortable speaking to that you can bring up on an interview, so that you don't get stuck in one of those situations where an interviewer asks a question and you're just drawing a blank. And take your time to answer, you know, you don't want to rehearse it and memorize word for word exactly what you're going to say, right? But just like having some of those ready that you can pull from will just make you feel so much more confident and not caught off guard in the moment.
And that will also make you feel more confident, understanding, oh, I do have relevant experience, because even from 8 to 10 examples, you can put them in so many different contexts. And I know companies that sometimes want to hear about the situation and specific actions you took and then specific results. So again, that might be just a little guide for somebody who is trying to apply. Like, you know, don't take 10 minutes in explaining the situation, one example, like just be very, very quick in doing it clearly and briefly.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. I think that's another common mistake that I'll see people make in interviews is you ask one question and they can spend 10 to 15 minutes on that one question. It's easy to do when you're talking, right? Like you lose track of the time. But as an interviewer, I also have a set of criteria that I'm trying to evaluate for. And so I'm going to either have to cut you off and it's going to make you feel uncomfortable, or I'm going to let you tell the whole thing and then we're going to run out of time. I'm not going to be able to get to some of those other points that might really be critical. And especially for a CSM, I think it's really important that you show that you have an awareness of that conversation and how much time you're taking and can kind of like stick to the task at hand.
Oh, absolutely. Because you also want to see from potential CSMs, how would they run a customer call immediately? How would they structure just based on their answers? That was really good call out. What were some of the other not to do or the common mistakes you have seen?
Yeah, I think along those lines too, another trick that you can always use is if you're worried that you're going to be too brief, that your answer is too concise, you can always say, I'm happy to answer any follow-up questions or dive deeper into any of those elements if there's something that's interesting to you there. an interviewer will dive in if there's something that they want more clarity on. But giving them that opportunity rather than just like sharing every detail, I think goes a really long way. And, you know, similarly to what I was saying with the CV is that don't assume you know the answer that the interviewer is looking for. Like, I know I ask a lot of behavioral and situational questions, and I'm really trying to understand, how do you problem solve? How do you approach different situations? What are the things that when you are calling back to certain examples from your past life, like, what are the things that are sticking out that I can start to see, okay, these are the interests and the motivations that this person has, and what might that look like on the team? And so if you're just telling me some picture perfect story about a customer experience that you have that I've heard 7 other times, I don't know why you are the candidate over the other people that I've been talking to. So don't be scared to have opinions or to be really transparent or honest about the things that you do really well and the things that you've improved on in the past. And also don't feel like you can only reference professional experience, right? Like, if there's other things that you've done where you've worked with charity organizations or volunteered or, have run your own project with your friends to get a show started in someone's garage or whatever it is, like, you can use those experiences too. And that actually shows your diversity of experience and your ability to apply those concepts in multiple different spaces.
And it speaks a lot about the characters. Or if you're asking questions, you know, what are the moments you're very proud of, or what you think makes you good in a role, etc. You can find out so much about someone's character and potentially how good or how well would they fit in with the team. As we're wrapping up, I wonder, do you as a CS leader have a set of principles or hiring criteria, or obviously you have hiring criteria. Do you have hiring kind of categories that somebody has to hit?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking for somebody that's a clear communicator. That's obviously very important. So somebody that I can easily follow their responses, and I'm always taking notes during interviews. So I need to be able to pull out, you know, what are the key points from what you're saying? And if I'm having trouble grasping that, that could be a sign that maybe customer interactions might be a bit of a challenge. And then, more than anything, what I'm looking for is just someone that shows that they have a growth mindset, that they are open to learning, and that they have the ability to do that, and that they can show how they've done that in the past. I think there's so much in tech that is really role specific to the company that you're at. Like, nobody's going to come in knowing everything they need to know to do your job, right? And so really it's like, okay, I'm looking for people that know that things aren't going to be perfect, that are comfortable with that, and that are willing to contribute to help make things better and help us grow our organization and our team. And then also people that are just curious, that are looking to learn, and that are comfortable to get into situations where they might not know everything and just figure it out.
And that curiosity is sometimes very easily recognizable with the questions that they are asking. So typically interviews end with some questions. What have you seen that works well? Not even types of questions somebody is asking, but maybe even the way that they are asking questions, or if they are not asking any questions at all, that's already telling you a lot. What's your advice about questioning the interviewer during the interviews?
I really like when people are asking questions about specifically how certain skills will come into play in the role. Like, they're trying to get a good understanding of what the role is, which shows me they're looking for a good fit where they can invest their time. They're not just looking for whatever's going to, fill their next role, that they're being mindful about what are the places that I want to develop in, and is this role going to provide that for me? I also think, people that are interested in just the organizational culture and trying to understand like how they're going to add to that culture and contribute, shows me as well that they are going to have an awareness of team, and that that's important to them, and that they're willing to uphold all of that culture that we work to put in place, and then they're going to bring something extra too and make it better.
Did you have ever interviews when people just didn't ask any question?
Oh, definitely. Interviews where people don't have questions. I think it is important that, you know, and sometimes you have multiple rounds. Like, I know with us, they're meeting with a screening manager first to go through some initial questions with our recruiter. And so sometimes they may ask questions there, but understanding like, okay, what are some of the more role specific questions that I can get into with a hiring manager are really important to have on hand, because it just shows that you're thinking about not only like from an interviewer's perspective, but how are you going to fit in the role? And is this something that you want?
I've noticed previously how, you know, asking questions can almost tells you equal amount of information as then just responding to your questions, just because you get to understand how they think and what are the things that matter to them. What are their values? Like what is it that they're emphasizing, et cetera. So again, it's just advice. People ask questions, please. It can really make a difference. Shannon, thank you so much for taking us through this process. We have to wrap up today and I'm just thinking, oh my gosh, I have so many more questions. What comes next? But maybe on another time. But this was really, really valuable. So thank you for sharing your insights. And at the end, where can people find you online?
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn. You can look me up, Shannon Nishi. And that's generally the best place to get me these days.
And I still need to ask you one more question. Okay, what would be your advice? Like one piece of advice for aspiring leaders in customer success in the current environment?
Yeah, I think, I recently resurfaced a quote that I think speaks to me, a Seneca quote that's about how luck is just when preparation meets opportunity. And I think that that is so true of life, but particularly in customer success, right? There's so many opportunities that you don't even know exist yet. And so making sure that you're staying open to those opportunities and are ready to take them, but doing the preparation so that you can take those opportunities and that you know that it's the right opportunity for you to be taking when you find those things, you know? So I know that's a bit of a high level answer, but I would just recommend for people in success to just constantly be looking for and open to those opportunities, but to be still intentional about what is important to you, what values you want to drive within an organization, what things you want to achieve in your career, so that when those opportunities present themselves, you're ready to jump on them.
That is a wonderful advice. And coming from former performing artists, you will know better than anyone else how much rehearsals and preparations are crucial in, you know, super performance. I would say it's same in customer success as in other industries as well. Constantly be prepared for something next, because it can come anytime and you never know. Shannon, this was wonderful. Thank you so much for coming to the show.
Thank you for having me, Maria. It was great chatting. And yeah, for all of you out there interviewing, I know it's a super challenging process, and, you know, find ways to recommit and keep it exciting for yourself, and good luck out there.
Thank you for listening. Next week, new episode. Subscribe to the podcast and connect with me on LinkedIn so you're up to date with all the new episodes and the content I'm curating for you. Have a great day and talk to you soon.